Imagine a plant so resilient it could rise from the ashes of near annihilation. Plant so sacred it was once molded into the very image of a god. Its grain so nutritious it holds the key to a healthier future. Welcome to the History of Plants, I'm Megan Brame. Today we are delving into the enigmatic story of amaranth, an ancient grain whose journey spans millennia, continents, and through the very heart of civilization. From the arid landscapes of ancient South America to the ritualistic heart of the Aztec Empire, its story is one of survival, suppression, and ultimately a remarkable resurgence. Where did this extraordinary grain come from? Let's journey back in time to the very dawn of its existence. Part 1, Amaranth's Original Story. Amaranth's story begins approximately 6,000 to 8,000 years ago across a wide area of what we now call South and Central America. It kind of makes you wonder just how these early people discovered the usefulness of amaranth. It's likely a process, in my head, of trial and error with, you know, like carefully observing animals eating it and thinking like, okay, they didn't die, so let's experiment a little and try it out. I'm not sure, that's just my theory. Regardless, something led those people to realize amaranth's potential as a staple grain that could support entire societies thanks to its rich nutritional value. They carefully planted, tended, and harvested this valuable crop season after season, year after year. But these farmers weren't simply growing food. They were building a relationship with amaranth, a relationship that would shape their cultures and help them survive and flourish. But the story of amaranth's beginnings is more complicated than it seems. Scientists are still debating exactly how it was domesticated. Did it all start in one place, in some kind of original garden of amaranth? Or did amaranth become a domesticated crop by different groups of people completely independent from one another? The fact that we still have several different species and names for amaranth, blood amaranth, my favorite Love Lies Bleeding, Prince's Feather, and many more, makes this a tough question to answer. And those are just a few of the 70 current recognized species in the Amaranthus genus, each with its own unique genetic makeup reflecting a complex evolutionary history. Regardless of its precise path down the evolutionary road, we know that early farmers weren't just planting seeds. They were acting like primitive geneticists by choosing the plants with the best traits, bigger seeds, higher yields, resistance to pests. They were shaping amaranth's development. While selective plant breeding might seem like a modern innovation, this process, which has been carried out over generations, is almost as old as agriculture itself, and it transformed wild amaranth into the domesticated crop that fed many ancient societies. Evidence suggests that amaranth was used in many ways. Archaeologists have found that ancient bakers ground the seeds to produce a nutritious flour, while others cooked the seeds like a porridge or used them to thicken stews. Historical accounts tell us that cultures in the Andes even learned how to pop the seeds like popcorn. It's likely a combination of these discoveries passed down through generations that solidified amaranth's place as a vital food source. But its story was not confined to the Americas. Birds, wind, and water currents helped disperse amaranth seeds across the globe. There are records of it in Africa, India, Nepal, and Greece, just to name a few. The Greeks gave it the name amaranth, actually, meaning roughly the never fading or one that does not wither, which is a fitting tribute, if you think about it, to its lasting nature. But its importance went beyond just being a food source, especially in one powerful civilization. Part 2, the Aztec Empire. For the Aztecs, amaranth, or wauti as they called it, was more than just a grain. It was a sacred link to the divine. It was more than just a food source. It was intricately woven into the fabric of Aztec life. Artisans meticulously ground amaranth seeds, mixed them with honey, and sometimes adding other ingredients like agave sap or even blood. But these mixtures weren't just about food. They served as a raw material for creating sacred effigies of Huitzi Lopochtli, I hope I got that right, the powerful sun and war god. These statues that were created embodied the essence of the god, representing his power and benevolence. In grand plazas, like you've probably seen the ruins, amid vibrant colors, rhythmic drumming, and swaths of incense smoke, priests dressed in elaborate costumes and led processions carrying the sacred visages. These statues were offered to the people and then consumed in a powerful act of communion with the god. This allowed them to absorb his strength and secure his favor, and was a symbolic act of nourishment, both physical and spiritual. But beyond its religious significance, wild tea was also essential to the Aztec diet. It was a staple food, providing essential nutrients to sustain their incredibly large population. It was eaten in various forms as porridge, in tamales, tortillas, and even used to make a fermented beverage. I would love to try some amaranth beer, wouldn't you? To them, amaranth was more than just a grain. It was a symbol of life, fertility, and the cyclical nature of existence. Its vibrant colors, especially those awesome deep reds and purples, were associated with blood, sacrifice, and the life force itself. The sheer abundance of its seeds represented prosperity and the promise of future generations. It was a gift from the gods. It was a testament to the interconnectedness of all things. But this era of reverence and this intricate relationship between the Aztecs and wild tea shattered in the 16th century. The arrival of the Spanish conquistadors would dramatically alter amaranth's destiny, threatening its very survival. Part 3, Conquistadors. The Spanish conquest brought devastation to, I wanted to say the world of wild tea, but honestly, the Aztec Empire, right? What had become a sacred grain that was central to Aztec life and ritual was deemed by them as a pagan threat. The Spanish saw amaranth's role in Aztec ceremonies as a direct challenge to their own religious beliefs. They viewed the wild tea effigies and eating it as an act of communion was the equivalent to idolatry to Catholicism or Christianity. And so they set out to eradicate amaranth, not just as a crop, but as a symbol of Aztec culture itself. The suppression of wild tea was brutal and systematic, spearheaded by figures like Hernan Cortes himself. Spanish authorities ordered the destruction of amaranth fields, burning them to the ground. Cortes issued explicit threats. Those caught cultivating the grain, continuing their, quote, idolatrous practices, unquote, would be killed. This wasn't just a threat, it was a policy that was very much enforced with violence. While, admittedly, widespread mass executions specifically for wild tea cultivation might not have been the norm, those caught cultivating the grain faced severe punishment, including the ever-present threat of violence. Fines and imprisonment were common, but the penalties could be harsher than that if the conquistadors felt it was beneficial. Individuals found to be leading or participating in wild tea rituals risked public humiliation, forced labor, and even corporal punishment. This threat, more than any specific documented instance, underscores the brutal reality of the suppression. The Spanish aimed to erase not only the physical presence of the plant, but also the memory of its significance to its people. They sought to break that connection between the Aztec and their sacred grain, to sever a tie between their past and their identity. This wasn't simply about agricultural policy, if you think about it. It was about cultural domination and the breaking down of things that were sacred to these people. But despite Spanish efforts, wild tea refused to vanish completely. Like the unfading flower for which it was named, amaranth proved remarkably resilient. It survived, admittedly clinging to life in remote, isolated areas. Indigenous communities at great personal risk would still secretly maintain its cultivation, passing down knowledge of its value and its sacred significance from generation to generation. In hidden gardens and remote mountain valleys, wild tea persisted as a symbol of resistance and of cultural survival. It became a lost grain, almost forgotten by the world beyond these very isolated communities. Yet, amaranth's story was not over. In a very cool twist, it lay dormant, just waiting for its moment to reemerge. Part 4, Amaranth's Second Act. Amaranth spent centuries hidden, a secret treasure held by a few, clinging to life in those isolated communities. From revered grain to reviled weed, its fate took a really dramatic turn. It is almost unbelievable, the propaganda against this plant, you know, like it was once sacred, and now some of its own kind is called pigweed. Pigweed, the audacity. We don't have many records of how it survived in other cultures because it wasn't as significantly or symbolically significant, I should say, than it was to the Aztecs. But suffice to say that the Aztecs probably had the most interest in keeping Amaranth alive. And so the fact that they were the ones targeted to have it eradicated is, not great. Putting it very mildly. But beneath that unassuming exterior, a treasure trove of nutrition was waiting to be rediscovered. And in the 20th century, the scientific community finally took notice. Amaranth's resilience paid off big time. It wasn't just shedding its pigweed label, it was exploding onto the scene as a potential superfood, thanks to a resurgence in scientific interest. The National Research Council's 1984 report, Amaranth: Modern Prospects for an Ancient Crop, played a key role in bringing amaranth into the spotlight. Researchers were drawn in by its incredible nutritional profile, the high protein, the abundance of fiber, its essential amino acids, and being gluten-free made it a lifesaver for people with dietary restrictions. Growing research continues to explore its potential health benefits, from its cholesterol-lowering properties to its potential role in managing blood sugar. Word of amaranth's incredible health benefits began to spread, and it took off. It popped up in everything from breakfast cereals and baked goods to protein bars and even cosmetics. We're also rediscovering amaranth's vibrant colors as a source of natural dyes, just like the Aztecs did. What's awesome about that is this offers a sustainable alternative to synthetic colorants and textiles. Plus, I mean, look, it's just a beautiful plant that's easy to grow, drought resistant, pest resistant, and is super adaptable. Gorgeous and low maintenance, what's not to love? But look, amaranth's journey isn't in the clear just yet. Even with its nutritional advantages, diverse uses, killer looks, and fascinating history, it hasn't quite hit the mainstream. As a grain, the price can be a bit steep, and let's face it, limited store availability and lack of consumer awareness are still holding it back. But going back to the last episode about silphium, we have to keep in mind that as demand grows, we have to make sure we're growing it in a sustainable way that is good for the planet and for the farmers. It's all about finding that sweet spot. Affordability, environmental responsibility, and making sure everyone has access. Will amaranth once again become a staple grain as it was for our ancestors? Can it truly contribute to global food security and improve public health? Its future, just like its past, is full of potential, but it needs to be nurtured carefully. The reason that I chose amaranth is because its story is one of extraordinary resilience and is a testament to the power of nature and its enduring connection between people and plants. From its ancient origins to its Aztec significance, near extinction, and its modern revival like a phoenix, amaranth's journey, in my opinion, is a compelling one. It reminds us that history is not just found in books, but also in the very seeds we sow. I'm Megan Brame. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The History of Plants. Jump into the episode commentary on Patreon or check out the video version of this episode on my YouTube channel, Plantrums. Until next time, greenies, stay curious and don't forget to flourish.